Right. So it's coming up to Shabbat Parshat Chukat. And Chukat is all about the red heifer. So there's a sort of a genre of discourse, of maimer, in Chabad, which presents this as something very relevant for our lives in general, even though the red heifer, which basically is a procedure which is carried out in order to purify someone from the impurity caused by being in the vicinity of a corpse, which of course is a very big mitzvah, the Chevra Kadisha, who look after him, it's on the Shvissen, preparing the corpse for burial, that's a very great mitzvah to do, and of course being occupied with burying the dead is something very important, going to a levoya and so on. But nonetheless, coming close to the corpse in various ways, being under the same roof or touching it, brings impurity on a person, and then they can't go into the temple. So in the time of the temple, there was a procedure with the ashes of the red heifer. So all that would seem very abstract and distant to us. However, Hasidic teachings make it something which is very relevant to our lives. So let's just read a few of these verses. Vayadaber Hashem el Moshe vel Aaron lemor. Do you see the beginning of the Sedra? God spoke to Moshe and Aaron, saying, Zot chukat ha-Torah. This is the statute of the Torah. Now the word statute, Rashi comments, we haven't got the Rashi in the text in front of us, but Rashi says, this law that you burn this red, you slaughter this red cow and then burn it and you use the ashes to purify someone, that seems completely beyond rationality. If you have a law like don't steal, honor your parents, these are laws that people can understand. Then there are other laws like keeping Shabbat because it's the day that God rested, the seventh day of creation, or Pesach because we went out of Egypt. Those are also concepts we can understand. But this is a completely irrational concept. So the way we divide the laws in terms of the rationality is mishpatim, judgments, which in fact are mirrored in other systems of law, non-Jewish systems of law, eduyot, testimonies, which are specifically Jewish, but nonetheless have a very distinct rationale, and then chukim, statutes, which are beyond reason. So kashrut is a law beyond reason, and shatnas, not mixing wool and linen together, not to mix milk and meat, all of these are considered chukim, statutes beyond reason. So that's one way of understanding this word chukah, statute, that's the normal or common way of translating it. Asher tziva Hashem le'mor, which God commanded, saying, Daber b'nei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, V'yikhu elecha farah aduma tmima. Let them bring you a red cow, which is perfect, Asher ein ba mum, which has no blemish, Asher lo ala ale ol, which has never had a yoke on it. And the tatem otan, you should give it El Elazar HaKohen, to Elazar the priest, that's son of Aaron. Vehotzi ota el mechutz lemachne, and he should bring it outside the camp. Veshachat ota lefanav, and it should be slaughtered in front of him. Velakach Elazar HaKohen midama, and Elazar, the priest, should take some of its blood, be'etzba'o, with his finger, v'hizah, and he should sprinkle it. He's now outside the camp. And in the time of the temple, he was outside Jerusalem. I think he was on Ha-Hatzofim, and like which is facing the temple. And there he would sprinkle el-nochach p'nei o el-moed, towards the face the entrance of the tent of meeting, midama, from its blood, sheva pa'amim, 7 times. So he dips and sprinkles 7 times. Vasarav et ha'para le'inav, so in front of him they should burn the cow, et ora ve'et psara, its skin, and its flesh, ve'et dama, and its blood, al pirusha, including all the innards, everything. It's not, most sacrifices, when they're washed, when they're slaughtered, they're also opened and cleaned and washed, but not with this cow. The whole thing is burnt, yischof, the whole thing is burnt. Ve'lakach ha'kohen eitz eretz ve'ezov, and then he should take a cedar branch, and the hyssop, which is a little plant which grows in the crevices of the rock, ushni tolad, and a scarlet thread, woolen thread, v'hishlich el toch sveifat ha'para, and he should throw it into the burning cow. V'chibes v'gadav ha'kohen, and the kohen should wash his clothes. In other words, this procedure makes him impure. V'rachatz p'tzaro b'mayim, he should wash his own flesh with water. V'acha yavu al ha'machane, and after that he comes into the camp. V'tameh ha'kohen ad ha'arev, but he's still impure till the evening, which is normally the case in the Torah. People who get impure from something, they go to the mikveh, but they are still impure until the evening. When the sun sets, when it's nightfall, then they become pure. And the person burning it also, he should wash his clothes. In other words, his clothes have themselves become defiled. And he should wash his flesh, which means going to the mikveh. And he will also be impure until the evening. So that's another of the paradoxes about the red heifer. The whole idea is to make people pure, but it makes the people who are organizing it impure. So it has this sort of opposite effect. Va'asaf, line 9. Va'asaf ish taho et efa apara. And a pure person, which means that he is pure and he is not defiled from anything. And how they organize this is a very interesting section of the Talmud and Mishnah explaining how they did this. He should take some of the ashes of the cow, put them outside the tent, outside the camp in a clean place, a pure place. And it will be for the community of the Jewish people, lemei nida, for water of sprinkling. Chatat, it is a kind of sin offering. So it has a function of a sin offering. The sin offering brings atonement to a person. The red heifer brings purity. V'chibes ha'osev et efa para. Now he too, the man who gathered up the ashes, he also has to wash et begadav, his clothes, v'tamei ad'arev, and he's impure till the evening. V'hayta livnei Yisrael, and it will be for the Jewish people, v'lager hago b'tocham, and the proselytes among them, l'chukat olam, for an eternal statute. Now we learn how it's actually used. All this is how it's being prepared. Line 11, verse 11. Hanoger b'met, someone who touches a corpse, l'chol nefesh adam, any human corpse, v'tamei shivat yamim, he'll be impure for 7 days. Hu yitchata bo b'yom ha'shlishi. He should be sprinkled, or she should be sprinkled with the ashes of the heifer on the 3rd day, or v'yom ha'shvi, and on the 7th day, and through this he'll become pure, yitor. V'im lo yitchata b'yom ha'shlishi v'yom ha'shvi, and if he is not sprinkled on the 3rd and the 7th day, lo yita, he will not become pure. And that's why we consider ourselves impure from the dead. And that's why in Jerusalem we can't go over the wall onto the Temple Mount itself, because we're impure, and only pure people could go onto the Temple Mount. Kol hanogeh b'met b'nefesh adam. Then it speaks about if someone touches a dead person and isn't purified by this, so we'll miss out. So that's a severe flaw. Now we come to line 14. verse 14. Zot haTorah. This is the teaching about the red heifer. Adam ki yamud ba'oel. A person who dies in a tent. Kol ha'ba'el ha'oel. Anyone who comes into the tent. V'chol asher ba'oel. And anyone who is in the tent. All that is in the tent. All the objects. Yitma shibat yamim becomes impure for 7 days. V'chol kli patuach. Every open vessel. Asher ein tamid patil alav, which doesn't have a sealed lid on it. Tameh, that will also be impure. Who? V'chol asher yigal p'nei hasadeh b'chal al-cherev, goes into different instances of becoming impure from the dead. And line 17, verse 17, v'lakchu latameh, now they should take for the impure person, me'afas chefat hapara, some of the ashes of the burnt cow, v'natan alav mayim chayim el keli, and they should put on it pure water, living water, in a vessel. In other words, they take the vessel, either they put the ashes in first and then they pour the water, or maybe they pour the water and they put the ashes in, but it's some kind of movement to do with the water and the ashes, and putting the ashes and the water into a vessel. And then one should take a hyssop, this thin plant, and the person who is pure should dip it in the water, and he should sprinkle it on the tent or the vessels or the people, and in that way he is purifying them. All right. So that's the basic law. It goes on. There's a whole tractate in the Mishnah called Parah. And it's often referred to in the Talmud, and a lot more details are given about the whole procedure. So we now have the question, how does this apply to us in 2018? Well, one of the keys, one of the clues, I'm not sure whether the discourse actually cites this phrase, but line 14, verse 14, Zot haTorah, this is the Torah teaching. Adam kiyam, and then it goes into the whole thing. This is actually another concept which the discourse doesn't talk about, comparing the Torah to a person. Zot haTorah, this is the Torah. Adam kiyamut ba'oel, a man who dies in a tent. So you can take just the first three words. This is the Torah, Adam, a man. The Torah is a person, and there's a certain similarity between the Torah and a person. For example, in the Torah, there are 365 mitzvot, 248 positive and 365 negative, which corresponds to a person who's got 248 limbs and 365 sinews. Further, a person has got a body and a soul, and the Torah, according to the Kabbalists and the Hasidim, also has a body and a soul. The body of the Torah are the laws, and the soul of the Torah are the spiritual teachings. So those are similarities between a person and the Torah. So now we're going to look at a discourse which was said by the Rebbe in 1988, in the weeks, in the months. It was said at this time, the 10th of Tammuz, which is this Shabbat as well, and that was the Shabbat of the of this Seder Chukah, and it was a few months after his wife had passed away in Shvat, and I'm considering these discourses as having a sort of special quality in this time, that they are giving some kind of easy to assimilate teaching. They're not so much abstract constructs. I mean, they're never really abstract constructs, but there's some way in which some kind of little thought process, some image is being transmitted to the hearer. And so that's what we're going to try and explore together. Oh, yam ba ya ya yom bambu, yam ba yom bambu. Ha-yom, bom, ba-yam, ba-yom, bum-bum. Ha-yir-dam, ba-yayir-dam, ba-yom, ba-yo. Ya-yir-dam, ba-yam, ba-yo. Ya-mer-dam, ba-yam, ba-yom. Ha-yir-dam, ba-yayir-dam, ba-yo. Ba-yam, ba-yir-dam, ba-yam. Ho-yam, ba-yir-dam, ba-yam. Right, okay, so let's look at the discourse. Zot chukat haTorah. Now, that's a very interesting thing as well, right at the beginning. This is the statute of the Torah, which suggests that there's something very significant about it, quite apart from the specific law, one of the 613 commandments. It is the statute of the Torah. Umavoal zebelikutei Torah, parshatenu. And it explains about this in the book Likutei Torah, which is the book of teachings by Rabbi Shneur Zalman, going Sedra by Sedra, and which the Rebbe calls HaChassidish Parsha B'Shavua Zeh, the Hasidic Sedra of this week. And he explains, Shechukat, the word chukat, which we've explained as statute, hu milashon chakika, comes from a different word, which means engraving, lachkok, to engrave. So we're talking about the idea of engraving. V'chukat haTorah, and the chukah of the Torah, hi b'chinat haTorah k'mo shehi b'chinat chakika. That means the Torah as it is when it's engraved. Now, of course, we have an image of the Torah as it's engraved. Where's that image?
When Moses brings the Ten Commandments.
Yes, when Moses brings down the Ten Commandments, the words are engraved. Now, later on, we have the concept of a Torah scroll, where the words are written. But the primal way in which we received the Torah was the tablets of stone with the engraved Ten Commandments. Now, this engraved Torah, shehi lemaila mitorah shebiktav, this is higher than the written Torah, the Torah shebal peh, and higher than the oral Torah, right, which is not written at all, at origin. Shaharei b'chtiva, because with writing, like a Torah scroll, hadyo v'hania hem shnei dvarim nifradim. The ink and the paper, or the parchment, they are two separate things. B'kol shechein, v'kal b'choma, and even more so, shal derech zeu b'vchina shalamat b'chtiva. It's so, when we're talking about something which is not written at all, I think he means here the oral Torah. So the oral Torah, it's words which have gone into our head, but we haven't actually got something to see. Shalachein efshar lahavrid b'neim. And therefore, it is possible to divide up between them. And that it's possible to divide up. Now, the question emerges to me, you could say the oral Torah, because the person learns the oral Torah by heart, which is the original way they used to learn the oral Torah, it becomes part of their mind. And if that is the case, then you would say that the Torah is part of them. But another way of learning the oral Torah is not learning it by heart, but it's simply hearing it taught, and you hear it, and, you know, some part you're awake, and some part you're not awake. You know, did the rabbi say this? Maybe. Ma she'en kein b'chakika, whereas with engraving, hare ei efshar lahafchid et otiyot hachika me'aven, it's impossible to separate the engraved letters from the stone. And of course, even if you learn the oral Torah by heart, a person can forget it. And so they forgot it or misremembered. Shaharei hachakika hi minei uvei. Because the engraving is part of that substance, part of that medium. Perush, meaning shahachakika hi be'evan atzma. The engraving is in the stone itself. V'lo chutz hemeno. It's not external to the stone. It is the stone. V'yitera mizu, and even more, shahachikika hi me'aven atzma, the engraving is the stone, not from something different. Now, I'm not quite sure of the difference. The little commentary page in line 39 on the right, at the bottom of the page. Koloma, that means the letters of engraving are not engraved by means of something which is external to the stone, like ink, but they are just part of the stone. They're not something separate. Right, I'm not quite sure what that means, but it's emphasizing how much the letters on the stone are part of the stone. Right, now here we have an important turning point. Right, at the moment we're just looking at this image, that there is Torah as it is written down, and it's written down, you can rub off the letters. And if you've learned, you've heard the Torah, you can get mixed up about it, you can forget it. But if it's engraved in the stone, then that's what it really is. Now, similar to this, Hugam ba'avodat Adam is also in the service of the individual to God. Shahakesha v'hashaychut, the connection of each shel kol echad ve'echad l'Torah mitzvot, of each individual man and woman to Torah mitzvot, tzarich liyod, it has to be lo rak be'ofen shel ketiva, not only in a way of writing it down. She'adam ha'makayem Torah mitzvot, that the person who keeps Torah mitzvot, v'ha'Torah mitzvot shehu makayem, and the Torah and mitzvot which he keeps, nisharim shnei dvarim, they remain two different, separate things. Ele tzarich liyod, but it has to be be'ofen kazeh, in such a way, shehatorah v'amitzvot yiyu chakukot ba'adam atzmo, that the Torah mitzvot should be engraved in the person himself or herself. V'yiteirah mizu, and even more, shechakika zu, that this engraving, tzicha liyot mi'adam gufa, has to be part of the person. Here we have the two ideas. It's engraved in the stone and it's of the stone itself. So it's not just that it's something engraved into the person. It is the person. It is that actual person.
It's a bit funny because when you think of engraving, it's actually removing some of the stone. By removing a bit of it, making what's left contain something extra.
Well, that's very interesting. I mean, you know, our bond with the Torah is, in as we could imagine, is a surrendering of certain aspects of our freedom. Because the person's bonded to the Torah, he can't eat this and he can't do that, and I'm sorry, it's Shabbat. You know, so there are a whole lot of different do's and don'ts. Mm. But through submitting to that and surrendering those bits that are being engraved out, that's how the Torah becomes the reality of the person. Mm. Now, I recently saw a story. I think it was one of these, my encounter with the Rebbe printed things, where a lady said, she came from a very Orthodox home. She lived in America, maybe in Crown Heights, which used to be much more varied. Now Crown Heights in Brooklyn is, to a large extent, Lubavitch Hasidim, but it used to be very, very broad, different groups of Hasidim, not Hasidim. But she came from an ultra-Orthodox home, and she lived in Crown Heights, I think.
Chabad?
No, she wasn't Chabad. And she had a friend. And the friend said to her, look, the Lubavitcher Rebbe is giving dollars on Sunday morning. Let's go together to get dollars. So she said, I don't want to go to the Rebbe. It's, you know, it's got nothing to do with me. I'm a frum woman. I live in a frum community. I was brought up very, very religious. You know, all the symbolic ways in which religious people express that. You know, I can't be bothered. Come along, said her friend. So she agreed. So So she came after, you know, 2 hours waiting online. She comes to the Rebbe. The Rebbe gives her a dollar. And he says, you should keep Judaism, not because the Torah tells you to do so, but because you want to do so.
And she it was in
L'chaim. Oh, in L'chaim, maybe. Yeah. It was,
yeah.
And she took that, you know, and she's like thinking about this. I think it took some time for the penny to drop. You know, she first thought, you know, so what's he told me? So what? You know, I'm a religious woman. I don't need to be told anything about Judaism. And then later, she began thinking about this. And she came to realize, do you remember how it went on, Nicole?
No. Which, I remember the story because, you know, it was basically... Well, like a lot of things, when you've got a certain set, you know, mindset, and somebody says something to you, and you sort of, and then only later, sort of suddenly, in the middle of the night, wherever the penny drops, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was considerably later, like maybe months or even years.
Yeah, I think it was, you said years.
Where she suddenly, she's been brought up very religious, but I think the way it portrayed it, she felt she is stuck in this religious lifestyle. And outside are all kinds of people who are free and who are happy and wear what clothes they like and go to dances and do this and do that. And I'm a religious woman, so I'm stuck in this. And suddenly, she thought of this thing, keep the Torah because you want to keep it. That's her. It's not something imposed on her. It's her. Now, I would say that that step is what we're talking about here. It's discovering the Torah inside us and the desire to keep the Torah as it's part of our inner being, not as something imposed by society and by people looking at us and expectations, or, you know, sometimes a spouse and sometimes this and sometimes that. But it's actually me. Hi.
Thank you. That's fine. This is Jacqueline. She lives down the road.
Hi, Jacqueline. Hello. Are you joining us?
Yes.
That's fantastic.
We met in Copenhagen.
In Copenhagen. How wonderful. What, in the Chabad house? Or
yes.
In the,
yes, Rabbi Lowenthal.
That's right. That's my son.
Yes.
Here, here's the text. Okay, do you want to give this to Nicole? Right, we're looking on the first page. And we reach line 20. So you have them this much. And what we're talking about is, by the way, do you know everyone else? This is Maureen.
Hello.
Hi.
Your neighbours, if you live down the road. You're not distant neighbours.
Opposite.
Oh, opposite. Not opposite me, not you. And this is Selena.
Hi, Selena.
And I'm Jacqueline.
Hi.
Right. Lovely to see you. So we're talking about the way that there are different levels of Torah. And the deepest level is like the tablets of stone which are engraved. And the idea that we need to find, see, there's a verse in the Seder of the Week. Zos chukat ha-Torah. This is the statute of the Torah. But the word statute also means chakika, engraving. Chukah, chakika. So the Rebbe is saying we need to find the point at which the Torah is us, not something imposed on us. And that's an extremely interesting idea. There's often a claim which is made about people brought up in a religious society, in a religious community, that they're just doing what they've been told to do. Their parents told them to do it. Their school tells them to do it. They haven't got any choice. They haven't got any freedom. Which, in a sense, it's true. I mean, they're in this social framework. If they start breaking certain rules, it can lead to all kinds of problems.
That's basically part of growing up, which either happens at teenage years or, as for this lady, much later. It's the difference between what's being imposed on you and what is part of you.
Yes, what you discover to be part of you. So my way of understanding Chinuch, Jewish education, I myself, part of the time I teach in a Jewish girls' school, is that there's a point where the student herself or himself has to discover, this is me. I'm not doing it because someone else is telling me to do it. I'm doing it because I want to do it. And that's really the turning point. And I see that as an important concept here. Finding the level of our own identity. The Torah is our own identity. And it's not something being imposed, but we have to discover that. So in other teachings, it explores the same thing by the Rebbe, the same theme, and talks about the way that the engraving of the letters can be filled in with dust, so you don't see it. So you have to somehow get past that, find a way to see the letters beyond the dust, and clear out the dust. Right, line 22. The Yesh Lomar, and one can suggest, Shahanitinat koach la'avoda zu, the empowerment to this service, bevchinat chakika, of serving God in this way, that we discover the engraving inside us of the Torah, hi mehaluchot, is actually from the tablets of stone which are in the temple, in the Holy of Holies. Those tablets of stone, they are the crucial paradigm of our bond with God in this very intense this sense of finding our own identity within the Torah. Shaharei ha'otiyot shabeluchot hein otiyot ha'chakika, because the letters on the tablets of stone are engraved letters. Va'aseret ha'dibrot shabeluchot, and the Ten Commandments on the tablets, they had an effect b'chol ha'olam kulo, in the entire world. As the sages said in the Talmud or the Midrash, shebe'et ha'mirat ha'seret ha'dibrot, at the time when God spoke the Ten Commandments, haya ha'kol yotze mikol arba ruchot ha'olam, the voice was heard from every direction, from the north, the south, the east, the west, from up and down, from all over. Hainu shebechinat hachikika, that means this quality of engraving, pa'ala gam b'chol ha'olam, had an effect on the entire world, kulo, completely. The whole of existence was expressing the idea, I am the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt. Ooh, so now we're turning over the page to page Vav. Umizen nimshach koach ba'avodat ha'adam, and from this we draw strength for the individual relationship of each person with God. Shegam avodato b'torah mitzvah, that his or her service, relationship, through study of Torah and keeping the commands, tiyah b'vchinat chakika, should be in a way of engraving. So in other words, at the very beginning of the giving of the Torah, we have this concept of the Ten Commandments, and that takes form in an engraved form on two tablets of stone. And when the Ten Commandments were given, it reverberated through the entirety of existence. In the same way, our Jewishness and our connection with God and our connection with the Torah and the mitzvot and all the do's and don'ts, instead of being an external thing imposed by society, who is looking at me and this one will make that complaint and that one will make another complaint, instead of that, it's me. That is what I am, and that's what I want to be. And the Rebbe believed that every single Jew, deep down, is very deeply a part of Torah, or Torah is very deeply a part of every single Jew, however remote an individual might appear to be at some aspect of their life. Nonetheless, Hasidic teachings, Chabad Hasidic teachings, very much endorsed by the Rebbe, believe that deep down every single Jew is totally bonded to the Torah and mitzvah, and it's only kind of different veils and clouds and dust or whatever it might be which hides that. That's for this reason, for that reason. Now, line 3. V'av sh'avodah zu. Now, even though this kind of service, this kind of relationship with God, shel b'chinat chakika, of the being engraved, the Torah being engraved inside us, he avodah gedola, is a very great service, it's a great level, it's something very high. Al ma shekatav Rambam, as the Rambam, Maimonides, wrote, b'noge l'avodat Hashem mitoch simcha, he wrote about serving God with joy, and that's something very important. He wrote, shehi avodah gedola, it's a very great service. So in other words, there's some kinds of service that we call a great service, and for him to serve God with joy, that's a great service. And the Rebbe is saying to serve God with this way of the Torah being engraved in us is also a great service. Mikol makom ein ze rachok me'adam. Nonetheless, this is not far from each individual. Shaharei nitan hakoach al ze. Because the power to do this is given to each person, kanizka la'el, as was mentioned above, through the fact of the tablets of stone. We all have some kind of relationship with the Torah. Interestingly, it's not quoted in this discourse, but there is the word Yisrael stands for Yesh Shishim Ribo Otiot La Torah. Do you understand that?
No.
No? Okay. Let me write it down if I can pull this pad out.
The 60,000 letters.
Yesh Shishim Ribo
600,000
Otiot La Torah. Now, as David is correctly saying, that phrase means, can you see it, Jacqueline? Yesh, there are 60 myriads, that means 600,000, of letters in the Torah, and that makes Yud, Shin, or Sin, Resh, Aleph, Lamed, Yisrael. So the word Israel, Yisrael, is saying there are 600,000 letters in the Torah, which there are, approximately. There's a whole discussion about that. So therefore, the Torah and the person are integrated. The Torah and the Jewish people as a whole, and the Torah and each person are integrated. And what the Rebbe is giving here, now, as I mentioned, in these teachings, which came after the passing away of his wife, there's a kind of intimate dimension where the Rebbe is giving a kind of more intimate guidance to people. He's giving concepts to take away with you. So this idea, this imagining the tablets of stone, which are, it's actually sapphire, the Luchot, the tablets on which the Ten Commandments were written, the sages tell us it was sapphire, it wasn't granite, or it was blocks of sapphire, two blocks of sapphire. And so there is the engraved Torah, and that is within us. That's our inner being. So that gives us, if we imagine that as some sort of inner dimension of our own self, from that we can understand that the Torah and us is our identity. It's not imposed. And it might be that it takes time for a person or for each one of us to get into that aspect of our own self. And but it's there. It's that concept that it's there, and that gives us the possibility to serve God in that way. So in other words, he's taking an idea which might seem to be a very rarefied concept, a tzaddik, a very special person. They feel the Torah is themselves. Other people feel, well, I have to do this and I have to do that, and do things with acceptance of the yoke. There's a concept, Kabbalat Ol, acceptance of the yoke of heaven, doing it even though you don't understand it and you don't really want to do it, but you force yourself. So people might feel that's the normal way people keep Torah. There's always some kind of dialogue going on. You know, do I really have to do that? Oh. You know. So what he's saying here, bear in mind that at one's very heart is this reality of Torah, like the Ten Commandments engraved on these two tablets, and that is actually the deep reality of the person. And so to reach that inequality is easy. Now there's a sense in which the whole philosophy of Chabad is to try to indicate how it is easy to keep Torah. That's what it says in the title page of Tanya, that this book, which is written by Rabbi Shneur Zalman, you know Tanya? So this book is written by Rabbi Shneur Zalman based on the verse, Ki karov elecha hadava me'od, the thing is very easy for you. The thing of Torah is very easy. Beficha uvilvavcha, in your mouth and in your heart, lasoto, to do it. So it's easy. It's a very easy thing to keep Torah. And so here is another of these images making it easy to keep Torah. That's the way the Rebbe thinks of it. Are there any points anyone would like to respond or comment?
It's easy to say it's easy. For the tzaddik to keep it, it's no problem. But what about for the average people?
The Rebbe's wife did once make a comment, which was overheard by someone, possibly by their doctor. The Rebbe had a heart attack in 1977, in the autumn. And as a result of that, he had a succession of doctors, some of whom got to know the Rebbe very well, and often saw the Rebbe at home with his wife in a way that most people didn't see them. And the Rebbe had told the Hasidim, you know, you've got to do this or that, or, you know, maybe something of this kind. So his wife said, he thinks everyone's like him. But that's a very interesting thing. He did think everyone was like him. He didn't see that difference. He saw that every person has
he
that.
He was seeing the inner, the essence of the yes. person, which is saying every it has that.
Yes.
But he isn't seeing the superficial coverings that most people have, because he doesn't really have that.
Well, you see, when it comes to him communicating with people, he was very aware of all the problems that people faced in their, you know, in their internal lives, and the things that are preventing people from doing what they're trying to do or what they should be doing. So he wasn't oblivious to... there's an amusing passage in Tanya where it says, the world is full of evil, as it says in a Kabbalistic book, in such and such a page. You wouldn't know unless you had this Kabbalistic book, you know. Fortunately, you know, without television or newspapers, you know, how would you know that the world is evil? That's... But I think the Rebbe was optimist. In fact, someone I know, there's been a lot of research about the academic research about Hasidism, I wrote a book on the history of Chabad, and a colleague is a dedicated mitnagid, an opponent of Hasidism, also in the academic world, and he wrote a book called The Faith of the Mitnagdim. So what are mitnagdim about? And he writes there that the Hasidim and the mitnagdim actually had the same worldview. From a Kabbalistic point of view, they were all Kabbalists. And they had the same worldview. They both believed that the Messiah will come through teaching the inner dimension of Torah. He says the difference between them is that the Hasidim were optimists and the Mitnagdim were pessimists. The Mitnagdim thought dangerous things would happen if you teach these ideas to people. And the Hasidim said, look, there's a way of doing it which will be totally positive. And so it's a very interesting analysis. And it's quite true that if the Hasidim in general are optimists, the Rebbe is an ultimate optimist. And always, in any situation, tried to change it round into something positive. And in giving advice to people, people came with a problem and he would try to show a way of seeing it. Including when he was ill, when he had the heart attack. So the doctor tells him, you know, Rabbi, I must tell you, 25% of people... I can't remember what the numbers were. He gave a number. This number of people do not recover. And the Rebbe said, so you mean the other number, you know, like 100 minus that, do recover. You know, so you look at it, how many don't recover, how many do recover. So put it the other way around. So there we have this idea that we have this power. Now, in the next line 7 onwards on page Vav, the Rebbe refers to something which was in that year, 1988, and is not this year, but I believe it's very relevant now as well, and so let's look at it. Ubifrat b'shana zu, and especially this year, shehishnat hakel, which is the year of hakel. The year of Hakel was every 7 years. And what happened was everyone would come to the temple, or they would be in the temple because it was Sukkot. And so everyone who was able to come would come to the temple for Sukkot. It was one of the three Shalosh Regalim, the three-foot pilgrim festivals. And they would put up a platform in the courtyard of the temple, and the king would sit on this platform, and everyone would crowd into the courtyard, and he would read out to them from the Torah. And men, women, and children would come, and the children riding on the shoulders of their fathers. And beautiful descriptions in the Talmud about this. Very, very beautiful atmosphere. And they're listening to the king reading from the Torah, and it was once every 7 years. And you could imagine a person who'd experienced that once would always remember it. Imagine if they'd have had a video of it. So the Rebbe says, especially since this year is the year of Hakel, because we can work out which years would be the Hakel years, Shabbat mudgash v'yoteh inyan achikika, and it's in a year of Hakel that this idea of the engraving of the Torah is more emphasized. Shaharei az yeshno inyan, because then in the Hakel year we have the idea Hakel et ha'am, gather together the people, ha'anashim v'hanashim v'hataf, the men, the women, and the children, v'hamelech kore lifneihem, and the king reads before them haparshiot shabatorah, the chapters of the Torah, sheshmiyat haparshiot mipip, hearing these readings from him, from his mouth. It's like hearing it from God. And one could say, in other words, there's actually a concept. whenever we study Torah, it's as if we were at Mount Sinai hearing God say the Ten Commandments. And there's a whole explanation of that in Hasidic thought, that whenever we study Torah, it's as if God is saying the words of the Torah with us and communicating it to us. The Yesh Loman, one can suggest, Shemitam Zeh, that for this reason, Hare Achdut Yisraeli B'Tachlit HaShleimut, the unity of the Jewish people is totally whole. Lo Hak Masha Nasiya HaKol, not only the idea that a king unifies the Jewish people, Eile Shemit Achdim B'Achdut Mukhletet, the Jewish people unify with a remarkable unity. Now, the Rebbe saw the idea of the unity of the Jewish people, whether people were religious or not religious, whatever they were doing, he saw them as fundamentally unified. And it was that perspective he was trying to communicate to others. V'hari inyan zeh, and this idea, ki ilu shomer mipi ha'gvura, as if hearing those teachings from God, he amitat inyan ha'chikika. That is the true engraving. So in other words, hearing the Torah teaching from the king every 7 years is an expression of the way the Torah is engraved within the Jewish people as a whole. And I would suggest that when the Rebbe imparts a discourse to us, this is also something that he is giving to us and enabling us to access this perspective which he has, but he wants us to have as well. That within us, the whole Torah is engraved, and that is our true reality. And that's a powerful image, I think, and a sense of empowerment that the Rebbe is giving us to view ourselves in this way, to view other people in that way. And it affects the entire perspective on life.
That makes it a bit easier from what you were saying before, about being easy. If you've got the support of the Rebbe and he can show you in yourself and in other people, it brings you up a bit, because you can relate to it.
Well, that's
it. Happier.
I think that's a very good point. I think that's what the Rebbe was in general trying to do, and sharing with us this image and helping us see ourselves and others in terms of this image, which he saw as a deep reality within us. Okay, so now we go on to consider a little bit more about the actual red cow, because this the verse in the Torah, this is the statute of the Torah, is talking about the red cow, and the red cow is the procedure to purify people from impurity caused by contact with the dead. So we're looking on line 18. Let's see how far we get. V'hinei mevoa b'likutei Torah sham. Now it explains in Likutei Torah, in Rabbi Shneur Zalman's discourse, the fact that it writes about the red cow, Zot chukat haTorah, this is the statute of the Torah. Hare ze mishum shepara aduma hi chukat kol haTorah kula. It's because this procedure with the red cow is really the statute of the entire Torah. There's something very central about this concept to the Torah as a whole. Umavaya Bezeni explains, Bechlalut inyan mitzvot, the whole idea of mitzvot, commandments of different kinds, who she'al yedei zeh, that through them, nimshach la'adam, a person, a man or a woman, achieves b'chinat u'madregat ratzo v'shov, moving forward and coming back. Now this is another image. Moving forward and coming back is like ebb and flow, like the water coming up the shore, and it comes in and then it goes out, comes in and then it goes out. But it's slowly, the tide is coming in, and you can watch the tide coming in, and slowly, slowly, slowly it's moving, even though every individual movement is forward and then back. Now, moving forward and then back is a very important aspect of the spiritual life of a person. Sometimes we can make a decision, bump, you know, I'm going to stop doing X or I'm going to start doing Y, and the person's made some sort of transformation in their life. But more common is that the person gradually moves forward a bit, moves back, moves forward a bit, moves back. And when they look back, if they can remember, over the last couple of years, they realize they've actually moved forward quite a bit, and things that they often might have done or not done 2 years ago, now that doesn't come into a question. That's not the issue. The issue is something else. There's always an issue. There's always an issue because we're finite and the Torah is infinite. So there's always an issue. For example, it says in the Code of Law, you're not allowed to worry on Shabbat. So a lot of people are working on that. Now, so that idea of moving forward and coming back, and that it explains, as it explains in that Hasidic discourse there. Now going on to the page Zion, and one can suggest Shazel Gamkin, this is also the reason, Masha Klalut in Yana Mitzvot, the idea that all the mitzvot nechlakot are divided l'shtechalukot into two separate groups. Mitzvot asei, positive commandments, things we should do, or mitzvot lot asei, and negative commandments, things we should refrain from doing. Shemakoran v'hatchalatan, their source and their beginning. Hem shnei dibrot harishonot, are the first two commandments in the Ten Commandments. Anochi, I am the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt. In other words, a positive relationship with God, leading us to all the positive commandments. And then the next one is, Lo yelecha, you shouldn't have any idols, you shouldn't serve idols. So it's a no, and that no of not serving idols includes not doing this and not doing that and not doing everything else, whatever we're not supposed to do. So we've got those two dimensions. Now, ki hadibu anochi, because the first statement, I am the Lord your God, kolo kolamach mitzvah taseh, includes all the 248 positive mitzvah. And lo yelecha, and do not have idols, includes all the 365 mitzvah, negative mitzvah. Now, how does this relate to moving forward and coming back? Mitzvot lo taseh, the negative commandments, they are like ratzo. They are moving forward towards God, v'havdala mina olam, and being separate from the world. You see, we're physical people in the world. We enjoy many aspects of our physical lives, whatever aspect it is, food, drink, all kinds of other things. And the mitzvah, don't do something, comes along, and it's saying something what we would have liked as far as just the animal responses of our body and our character. We would have liked to do that, but the Torah is saying don't do it. So therefore we have to withdraw from that earthly side of ourselves and focus on the divine. And so that is a kind of a movement towards the divine. Whereas on the other hand, line 8, u'mitzvot aseh, the positive commandments, hei mipchinat shuv, they are doing something in the world. Like it comes to Shabbat and you light Shabbat candles, which admittedly is a rabbinic commandment, but it's a very significant one. We're doing something in the world, illuminating the world. Positive things, giving charity, learning Torah. We are drawing something into the world, making the world into a more holy place. And for this reason, Para Aduma, the red heifer, he who chukat kol haTorah, is the statute of the whole Torah, because in the red heifer, you've got these two concepts. You've got the idea of Ratzor, moving forward towards the divine, and coming back. How? Because the burning of the calf, right? So now we had this whole image that the animal is slaughtered and then it's burnt. So the burning represents fire rising upwards. That's like us trying to be a bit more spiritual, something or other that we do and we're not supposed to do. We decide we're going to give it up. So that, at least this week. So that's the movement upwards. And the return, now, if you remember, you got the ashes of the red heifer and you put it in the vessel and then you pour water. So this pouring of water is like a downward motion. And so that pouring of water into the vessel, that's like the downward motion of doing the mitzvah down here in the world. Sugazut.
Thank you.
So there we have, within the red heifer, the idea that in its procedure, which is described in the Torah, that there's the burning and the pouring of water into a vessel, those two actions are like the moving upwards towards the divine and the coming back into the world. And both of those are completely part of our daily lives. We're all the time moving in one direction or the other. And by this image that the burning is like the negative mitzvah, trying to keep the negative mitzvah, don't do such and such a thing, or don't speak about such and such a thing, or don't think about such a thing. So there are more and more subtle aspects to it. And so trying to do that, that's like the burning of the red heifer. And the putting of the water in the vessel is doing some positive mitzvah and doing that in such a way that it's that we're bringing godliness into our domain, into the daily world around us, as our physical person and the home in which we live and our family and those with whom we come in contact. So there we have two images of the way in which we learn something from the red heifer. One is the idea of that it's chukah, that it's engraved within us. And then is the concept that there is also the moving forward and the coming back, which can be seen as the negative mitzvot, moving forward towards the divine, away from the world, denying ourselves something, feeling that we're denying, and until we come to the point that we wouldn't imagine doing that. So that's the other aspect of moving forward and coming back. That not only is it the two aspects of mitzvot, negative mitzvot, moving forward to God, positive ones, coming back into the world, but also in general, our movement in Jewish life is very often a movement forward and movement back, growing. Now, the last section, he talks about the way in which what the Para Aduma is doing, what the red heifer is doing, is purifying from the impurity of the dead. That's what it describes in the Torah. Now, with death, we have Mizol Mishvissen, but we have an interesting concept that death comes into the world because of the sin of the tree of knowledge. And what will happen when Mashiach comes? Will there be death or will there not be death? The Rambam thinks there will be death, but the Ramban thinks there will be. And the Hasidim follow the Ramban, Nachmanides. So what does it mean there won't be death? It means that the world will have achieved a wholesome quality that it had at the beginning of creation, before the sin of the tree of knowledge. And that whole process will have reached tikkun, will be resolved. And so this means there will not be anything negative. As Isaiah describes it, a child will be able to play with a scorpion. Lions will stop being carnivorous. They'll lie with the lamb and will eat hay. And human beings will be extremely pure, and death will be dissolved away. Now, in the end of this passage, the Rebbe speaks about the way that death is actually an ascent to a higher level. There is the river of fire, what's called Nahar Dinur, the river of fire, which the soul dips in. And then it goes beyond that, and it's like purified by the river of fire. And it goes beyond that into a higher level and a higher level. That's why on a yacht site, we say the soul should have an ascent. That's the idea of the soul always climbing high. So the Rebbe says when Mashiach comes, we will have the idea of climbing higher, but we won't have the river of fire, which represents the bitter moment of death. So instead of that negativity of death, there will be the positive ascent higher and higher. And that's the ultimate fulfillment of the red heifer, which comes to purify the impurity of death, and ultimately through the Torah, which it represents, the entire Torah, and being so deeply engraved with the Torah that that's our inner being, which would all be expressed with the coming of Mashiach, death itself will be dissolved away, and there will only be positive movement towards God higher and higher.